listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode 212 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford.
That's it, you remember my name this time.
I'm lucky. I tried to do a witty kind of intro for you, but my vocab let me down. But I was trying to say, you're back in Blighty?
Yeah. Last time we spoke, I was in Qatar, or Qatar.
Well, yeah, we spoke on video, didn't we?
With some good people said it was good, yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to. We've got a few little audio issues to sort, but the plan is to actually start live streaming all of our podcasts, even if these ones, like when we're side by side. Just so people can have a look at us, and I might do my hair better next time, maybe wear a shirt, I was thinking. But yeah, apart from that, it's pretty good fun.
Do we have to be makeup and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Regan sort all that for us.
Yeah, lights, makeup.
Yeah, okay. I want one of those mirrors with the lights around it. And I want my tea stirred anti-clockwise.
I'm going to have to have, face job, nose job, have my teeth done,
Yeah.
Going to be serious stuff.
Well, yeah, we'll need to set aside a good hour and a half for you, I think. But how are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Interesting time in Qatar.
Pretty warm out there, I believe.
Very, very hot, 52 degrees. Very, very windy, with lots of sand in the wind. So it's like being sandblasted in a furnace. And once you get over 50 degrees, it is hot. Phew. And the poor people that were doing Ramadan that can't drink between sunup and sundown. That's a long time in that heat not to be able to drink.
That's hard work, isn't it?
That's tough stuff, yeah.
That's some devotion to your faith, isn't it, for sure?
But Eid at the end of it.
Yeah.
So it's party, party, party now.
Yeah, we're going for it big time now, eh?
And there's a second Eid, I didn't know that. You have Ramadan and Eid, which sounds pretty much like Lent and Easter in many ways. And then you have another Eid later on at the end of August, which is much more like Christmas. So there's no fasting, it's more celebration.
Well, just good stuff.
So, yeah.
Okay, interesting. We're talking about trauma this week and kind of how to get over traumatic events if you've seen something particularly disturbing. So we'll come on to that shortly. First of all, our website liveinthepresent.co.uk. If you're new to the show, check out that because there will be lots of show notes, links that we'll discuss that you can very handily access from the webpage that we create for each and every podcast, and all the old ones are on there too. Stick your email address in the box and we'll send you some free meditation files, and you'll get weekly alerts as well, thanks to our friends at MailChimp. And of course, also don't forget to have a look at our friends at clearmindcushion.com, who've created an amazing little meditation cushion. And if you use the code SELFHELP, all one word, you'll get a 10% discount. Not too shabby, eh?
Yeah, it's very good.
So yeah, well, apart from guitar, what have you been up to?
I've been to Cork as well. I'm a jet setter now, so the Friday I arrived back from Cork, I got a few hours sleep and then flew off to Qatar.
Sheesh.
And then came out from Qatar, and then Robert and Hannah are moving into a new house. I've been Bob the Builder all weekend. So.
And he's off there painting, decorating.
It's just painting, now. Yeah, so it's all hands to the pump, trying to get themselves sorted,
Good fun. Yeah, it's busy, man. I've got a busy couple of months coming up, just with seeing friends and family, all good, really, and holidays. And enjoyed Glastonbury at the weekend on the telly. I didn't manage to get there this time. And I was trying to think, I probably won't for ever, really, because getting the kids out of school. My wife's a teacher, so she can't take the Friday off, really. I won't be able to go to Glastonbury.
You poor thing.
Yeah, but the Beeb do some good coverage of it, don't they?
Mm.
There was a lot of good shows. I'm a big Radiohead fan, so...
And you don't have to get covered in mud to Friday night. To watch it.
I was loving it. Yeah, I was loving it. I had a couple of glasses of wine. I was tapping my foot away in the living room to all the Radiohead classics, watching people moan about how miserable they sound. But yeah, I love it. But should we crack on with this week's show?
Yeah, we're going to look at some trauma.
Yeah.
Post-trauma.
Now, this has been triggered by a slightly traumatic event in my life.
Yeah. Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, I don't want to say too much because it's kind of an ongoing case, really. But basically, I was on my way to work and I witnessed a man drown in the river, in Mersey. I was completely helpless. There were other people there kind of doing what they could. Emergency services were on the way. You could hear the sirens coming, but one got out, or what I found out later, and the other one didn't make it. And I literally arrived as he went under and didn't surface again. And some of the things I heard and saw, you know, they're going to stay with me for a long time, actually.
I think that it's fair enough to say, without being disrespectful to anybody, that one of the things that you shared with me was the trauma of hearing someone's last breath.
Yeah, that's the main thing that I do has stuck with me a little bit. People keep asking me that I've told about it, like my mum and the chap that I'm at a sharing office with. He's like, "You're right, Ed." Like a few days after, thinking about what I'd witnessed. I'm okay. But yeah, that the noise of him taking the last breath.
That's something which is really important when we start to look at post-traumatic symptomology, is it can be smells, tastes, fundamentally sounds. You know, sounds, very, very powerful things that would pull us right back to the traumatic event.
Yes. So I'm cool. I think I'm all right. We'll see how long it lingers.
If you think of the word trauma originally,
it
referred to physical injury. No, it was. That's what it was about. It was about traumas, lesions, cuts, breaks.
Yeah, well, it still does apply. I think that's respected in hospital, doesn't it?
But psychology kind of hijacked it to imply this kind of emotional trauma. It's emotional hurt, damage, wound.
Which I don't think anyone would deny the effect of traumatic events on someone.
And then the issue then is, what's trauma and what's post-trauma? So a trauma psychologically is when we have a distressing event, and usually it's an event that we're helpless to. Most people will process those emotions in 4 to 6 weeks. So like trauma, you know, it could be a death, could be a divorce, could be anything like that. So we process that emotion through. When we get a post-traumatic event, it's when it continues after those 6-8 weeks, and we're having things like flashbacks, disturbed sleep, you know, starts to affect our relationships. There's a whole stack of symptoms that come with post-trauma, right through to the issue of suicide. That following traumatic events, some people get to a point where they can't see any meaning left in life.
Yeah.
And the classic that we have stats about is the Vietnam War.
Right.
And it varies on where you look, but it's estimated that in excess of 50,000 Vietnam veterans, Americans, and I guess there were Canadians and Australians in there as well, have committed suicide.
Wow.
Lots of estimates say that there were more people, more American GIs committed suicide after Vietnam than were killed in Vietnam.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blimey, yeah, it's a good movie. Born on the 4th of July, Tom Cruise movie, which depicts that.
Yeah.
The trauma of going through that process quite well. Worth checking out.
And obviously, my work over the years, I've done work with all kinds of people, train drivers, knocking people over, people jumping under trains, that kind of thing. But also the various 999 services. So Coast Guard has to deal with some quite horrendous things that don't get publicised. You know, they say a body was found in the water. They don't say what had happened to the body in the water because it's not nice or that.
Yeah.
Especially if it's been in there for a few days.
I mean, I was thinking because it was in the news, local news anyway. But the chap hasn't been found yet, or his body hasn't been recovered. So at some point, it's going to show up somewhere. And I was actually further down the river at the weekend with family, just kind of mucking around and on the beach. And I was thinking, blimey, what happens if he shows up now? And as you know, there's hundreds of people here that are going to witness it. That in itself is going to be a huge trauma. It just kind of spreads, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, blimey.
Yeah.
Serious stuff.
And the thing is that the more people that experience a trauma, then the greater is the effect, has a ripple effect. So we're currently in Britain, we've had a series of things, the terrorist issues that have been going on.
Yeah.
But also we had the block of flats that caught fire.
Yeah.
One of the things about post-trauma is you can get vicarious post-trauma. So you get people that were not living in that block, but they're living in another block, maybe in another part of the country, and they're starting to experience the trauma as though it would happen to them in their block.
Yep.
The flats. So we start to get this vicarious trauma. It may be that somebody Certainly therapists can become traumatized by listening to people's stories of their trauma.
Really?
So you get vicarious trauma. And sometimes the therapists have to go for their own traumatic desensitization once they've overloaded with it. If you're working with people that have been abused as children all day,
yep.
You know, by the time you get to the end of the day, you feel like you've been abused.
Mm. You're carrying all that baggage.
Yeah.
So what do you do to reset that?
Or in terms of, as therapists all have what we call supervisors, but effectively therapists look after each other. So that if you're overloading with stuff, then you go to somewhere else and start to unload your stuff. So you're not carrying too much around. Because
yep.
One of the things that isn't realised, I'm not sure of the latest statistics, but it always was that the highest rate of suicides per capita was with psychologists and psychiatrists.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know where that stands now. I think farmers actually took over.
Farmers?
Yeah, at one point.
Okay.
As farms became more mechanised and there were less people on the farms, so you might have one guy working on his own.
Loneliness takes over.
Yeah, the loneliness, but also the huge debt and the problems that have gone with farming.
Yep.
You know, quite high levels of suicide. And one of the things, when you look at the traumatic suicides, is that more women attempt suicide than men, but more men succeed in suicide than women. And that's because they use much more traumatic, violent ways of doing it.
Right.
Yeah, women tend to take pills, that kind of stuff. If you hang yourself or you shoot yourself, then it's hard not to succeed. Mm.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, but then the person that discovers that scene...
It then has the trauma.
They...
Yeah. And that's something that I've had to deal with a lot over the years. It's funny, that, because sometimes... Funny, peculiar, not funny, ha-ha.
Yeah.
Where someone wants to commit suicide, and sometimes if it's an expression of anger, people would do it in a very public way to the people that they want to express their anger to. So the idea of hanging yourself inside the front door so that when your partner comes in, the first thing they see, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep, I know of a story of that recently for a friend of a friend that happened to them. But actually, luckily, they didn't open the door. Well, because, the door was locked, so he'd locked the door. So the person couldn't get in. And basically, the police had to come and open the door because I think she sensed that something was amiss.
Yeah.
And they're the police, but then the police have got the trauma, haven't they? I know they're probably trained to, and they probably get some kind of professional help.
Again, I used to run part of the North Wales and Chester police, was part of their occupational health service.
Right.
You know, so it's like, who do they come to? And we have specialist techniques that we use, like rewinding techniques, where you're trying to rewind the visual responses, because people... When people are flashing back or they're thinking about, then it's the images in their head that are the biggest problem. So you get image and then you get the reaction, which is the resensitization of the trauma. And if it's not dealt with, it can build up over time. So the trauma becomes greater and greater and greater each time you revisit it.
Are some people just better equipped to deal with things through their upbringing? Just, or are we all susceptible to...
I think we all have a susceptibility. I think it's one of the things... You know, we've spoken about anxiety in the past, that people that are anxious, they can only be anxious if they've got a good imagination. Yeah? If you haven't got a good imagination, you can't imagine the things to be anxious about.
Okay.
Yeah? But that's true of trauma as well. The more effective your visualisation mechanisms... Some people can visualise things, some people can't. But the greater the visualizer, then the greater the level of trauma, very often.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when you use a rewind technique, you're going back through emotional images and reducing the level of emotional attachment. That's what you're doing. So at the end of the therapy, the person can still view those incidents, because you can't change those. They're like structural memory. But they can view those images without... getting highly emotionally aroused about them, or angry, or whatever.
Yeah, okay,
yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned rewinding. Then explain a bit more of that, and maybe some other techniques that you use when you're trying to help someone that's witnessed.
Sometimes people just need to talk about it and just be heard. They need someone, because very often the things that people need to tell you are the gory details, the things that they feel that they can't tell their loved ones, people that they know.
Yeah.
So as a person who's kind of relatively anonymous as a therapist, someone can come in and tell you the most horrendous things in the most horrendous detail. And that may include things like smells and tastes and all kinds of things that happened in the trauma. Or some quite disgusting things, you know, that would be awful.
Yeah.
But then once someone has shared that, very often that can be enough. Just have been able to say these things that they felt unable to say to anybody else.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Sometimes when you use a rewind technique, it's like getting the person to watch the images going backwards and forwards through a camera, like winding them backwards, running them forwards, winding them backwards. And it's because you're using two sides of the brain. When you run an image forwards through the camera in your head, that's a highly activated emotional side. To run the film backwards through the camera, you have to use your cognition to make it go backwards.
Okay.
And it's like, when, as you wind it backwards and forwards, you can see the level of arousal with each wind dropping, and you can get it down to a point where it becomes an okay level to view the memories at without getting high levels of emotional arousal. It sounds a bit like voodoo, but it's amazingly effective when you're doing it. And I've done it with probably hundreds of train drivers. And ambulance drivers, fire guys, policemen, you know.
Yeah. Are emergency service staff and people like train drivers and nurses, are they kind of trained initially as part of their training to prepare them for...
Not really.
Because, you know, as a doctor or a nurse, you're going to see some sights, aren't you?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a kind of an informal... But there's no real preparation. You know, it's a baptism of fire for most people.
Yeah.
And the first time they experience a traumatic death or a traumatic accident where maybe there's kind of loss of limbs or deformities and things like that, and being able to hold it together so that you're there in an appropriate way for the person, for the patient.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Can be tough. But when you see people that are good at it, one of the things I've always found in the health service, there's a lot of territorial army volunteers, and that very often they've done tours of duty in Afghan or Iraq or whatever, and they are really good when it comes for doing sort of critical incident debriefing, because they've done it in the battlefield.
Okay.
And when you're in a hospital and you've had a horrendous, you know, like maybe there's been a massive pile-up on the motorway and there's just been stacks of really badly damaged people coming in, these guys are used to dealing with it. And not only are they used to dealing with it, they're used to doing the debriefing bit that they would have done with teams on the battlefield. So they are very powerful people in that organisation. Very often missed, but when you grab them as a resource, they are really good.
Wow.
You know, really worth having on your team, kind of thing.
And if left untreated, these kind of things, yeah, leans it, we've mentioned suicide, but also drink and drugs.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that's going to anaesthetise the emotion. You know, but I've worked with people who 20, 30, 40 years after an event are actually dealing with it for the first time.
Wow.
You know, and they've spent...
Been carrying it around for...
Yeah, and sometimes they've had it blanked off with legal medication, tranquilizers, as it were.
Yeah.
Antidepressants. Sometimes it's been illegal drugs or the classic is alcohol. Alcohol is an amazingly effective emotional anaesthetic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Let's hear it for alcohol.
Woo, woo.
Yeah.
The thing is that when you come round from the alcohol, not only are you hungover, but you're actually quite depressed from the alcohol.
Yeah.
So it kind of feeds negatively on itself.
Yeah, it's a short term.
Yeah.
Fix, so.
You know, how many times when someone's had a shock, do some people say, you know, have a stiff gin or have a brandy or something
yeah.
like that? You know?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully there'll be some cooking sherry in the cupboard that you can drink. Yeah. Have a stiff one.
What about kids who see things that they shouldn't or wish they hadn't, but they haven't got the kind of capacity to express their thoughts?
Well, that's even better. There's a lovely technique taught to me by a guy called Neil French, who's subsequently passed on, and he ran an organisation called the International Association of Hypnoanalysts, which was an amazing organisation training people in doing therapy. But the blowaway technique, because a child has images, and this is the thing about traumatic memory, is an emotional visual thing. Yeah, they may not have the vocabulary to describe what's happened to them, but they know what's happened.
Okay.
So what you do is you get the child, they go back through the story in their mind because they can see it. They can't tell you it so much. But what you do is you create a safe place for them. So that place is a safe place, good place to go to in their mind. And then you take them to the trauma. And as you take them through the traumatic event, you get them to blow away and blow into the safe place. Right, so I'm working with this little guy who's going through some awful stuff, abuse stuff, and I never knew the great detail of it because he didn't have the words. But he's lying down with his eyes shut going with tears rolling down his face as he was trying to dump it and go to the safe place.
You know? Wow.
And it took us several sessions and several hours, but then he could visit those memories without having the emotion and come back to the safe place.
Blimey.
Yeah. And it's quite magical when you see that happen. You know, awful that a child should be in that position, but lovely to see them mm-hmm. come out the other side. But using blowaway techniques, using rewind techniques, you can work visually and emotionally, because talking therapy, when you're talking about trauma like that, it's almost like you take it out and you rehearse it, and then you polish it and you put it back and save it for later.
Yeah.
Because it's not a logical cognitive thing that's the problem, it's the emotional feelings. And things like smells, tastes, colours are to do with emotion, they're not to do with logic.
Yeah.
And it's quite a weird way of working, and not all therapists can do it, because if you've been very logically, cognitively trained, it doesn't work so well. And which is one of the problems with things like CBT. You know, I have an odd relationship with CBT. I do use CBT techniques when they're appropriate.
Cognitive behavioural therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And although CBT practitioners will tell you that they do deal with emotion, they predominantly deal with cognitive behavioural relationships rather than the emotional part. And very often a CBT therapist, if you start raising emotions, they'll say, no, I can't deal with that here. You've got to go to counselling for that. Which shows the kind of inadequacy and some of the technique, really. But when you're dealing with cognitive stuff, cognitive therapy is great. When you're dealing with emotional stuff, cognitive therapy tends to bang a cork in an emotional bottle and stuffs it down. And then over time, the emotions kind of punch the cork back out again and it pops out.
Right.
And that can be years after the event. You know. So people say to me, I had CBT for this and it worked really well. So what are you doing here for now? You know, what's that about?
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say, or have you got a resource?
My resources are two, really. One is that if you go on any of the app sites and the app stores and just type in PTSD apps, post-traumatic stress disorder apps, there are some really good apps out there that have been... designed for specific issues, like there are ones there from the military and that kind of stuff. Yeah, and when you go through them, they're great. There's lots of good stuff in there. Yeah, but ultimately, when you've got real post trauma, you can't beat having therapy.
Yeah,
and that therapy may be going on mindfulness type programs, maybe doing rewind type programs. But actually having another human being to address your trauma with is such a powerful experience, because it normalises the experience. And that's the thing what I said at the beginning about very often people can't say the things that are inside them to the people around them because they're scared that they're going to actually hurt them by sharing what's going on in their head.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So having someone that you know you can go to... It's funny... My little consulting rooms, different places, people will say to me, I love this room because I feel safe in here. It's like a holding environment. They can just let go in there.
Mm.
I mean, that kind of thing.
Okay, so you got the PTSD app and therapy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is there any place, I mean, apart from dropping you an email, where people could go to find a therapist nearby, or...?
If you go to... the best place would be... There's something called the Human Givens. Not Gibbons, Givens.
Givens,
yeah.
Okay.
And the Human Givens training programs. They train a lot of people in the rewind techniques, and they have lists of therapists around the world.
Cool.
That are useful to go to. And you know that if they are Human Givens trained, that they will be pretty good.
Cool. Yeah. Badge of honour.
Yeah.
Cool. I've got a TED Talk that I'm going to share, which I haven't watched, but I just found the title looked interesting in the little summary by Nadine Burke, How Childhood Trauma Affects Health Across a Lifetime.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
If left unchecked, this stuff can really take hold, can't it? So.
Well, one of the things about mindfulness, I know you struggle with your meditation stuff, but when people manage to meditate on a regular basis, what tends to happen is, because I always call it mindfulness-based self-coaching, because what happens is that as you learn to take away the layers of kind of resistance in your mind, you let go of so much stuff that goes back years.
Yeah.
You know, and it is a self-therapeutic process, but you have to do it consistently, day on day. You know, and it does have a really profound effect on trauma. It's good.
Cool. Okay, we'll wrap it up then. Livingthepresent.co.uk for all the links we've mentioned. There's a few actually that I didn't talk about that I meant to, but are worth checking out and investigating. Clearmindcushion.com with the code SELFHELP gets you 10% off a fantastic meditation cushion. Have a look at that. There's a link in the show notes as well to there, should you need it. We'll be back next week, possibly via YouTube.
We're going to get exciting next week.
Stand by, watch this space, and take care till then. All right, yeah. Sean, cheers.
You take care. See you.
See ya.
Bye.